Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. She's come a long way from segregated Birmingham, Alabama, to the innermost circle of the President of the United States, and she's about to be promoted again. Condoleezza Rice testified today before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. In a matter of days, she's expected to be confirmed as the nation's 66th Secretary of State. She said today it's time for public diplomacy. Everyone seemed to agree. Some argue the country needed a lot more diplomacy over the past 4 years, and that Condoleezza Rice, as the deepest of White House insiders, bears some responsibility for policies that pushed the U.S. out of world favor and into a grinding war in Iraq with no end in sight. Tonight on Point, confirmation hearings and Condoleezza Rice, the impact and worldview of the new Secretary of State in waiting. Condoleezza Rice opened today with a statement outlining the challenges she'll face if confirmed. Let's listen.
Our interaction with the rest of the world must be a conversation, not a monologue. And America must remain open to visitors and workers and students from around the world. We do not and will not compromise our security standards. Yet, if our public diplomacy efforts are to succeed, we cannot close ourselves off from the rest of the world. If I am confirmed, public diplomacy will be a top priority for me and for the professionals I lead. In all that lies ahead, the primary instrument of American diplomacy will be the Department of State and the men and women of its foreign and civil services and foreign service nationals. The time for diplomacy is now, and the President and I will expect great things from America's diplomatic corps. We know from experience how hard they work, the risks that they and their families take, the hardships they endure. We will be asking even more of them in their service of the country and of a great cause. They will need to develop new skills and rise to new challenges. This is a time that calls for transformational diplomacy. More than ever, America's diplomats will need to be active in spreading democracy and fighting terror and reducing poverty and doing our part to protect America's homeland.
Secretary of State in waiting at this point, Condoleezza Rice, today before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. We begin tonight in Washington with Paul Richter, foreign policy correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He's been covering the hearings. Paul Richter, thanks for being with us tonight.
Glad to do it.
Can you give us a sense of the feeling in the hearing room today? What kind of reception? We've seen lots of snippets. There were some tough exchanges, but overall, what kind of reception did Condoleezza Rice get today?
For the most part, I would say it was polite. And everybody acknowledged that she's going to be confirmed. So there wasn't a lot of suspense. At the same time, there were moments when the Democrats' unhappiness with the Iraq policy was clearly evident, as when Barbara Boxer came out and asked Rice to account for a bunch of contradictory statements she'd made before the invasion of Iraq in 2003.
And, of course, Condoleezza Rice came back and said, "Are you impugning my integrity?" In effect, don't do that.
Right. She defended herself strongly, stood her ground as she did during the 9/11 hearings earlier in the year. But it was both sides made their strong disagreement clear on this one.
Was the questioning along partisan lines? Was it all welcome from the Republicans and fire from the Democrats?
A lot of fire from the Democrats, but there were, interestingly, there were some questions from the Republican side, too. Lamar Alexander, who was George H.W. Bush's education secretary, raised a question asking, wouldn't it be easier for us to spread democracy by setting a good example for the rest of the world rather than intervening directly in other countries' affairs?
And Dr. Rice's response?
Her response to that was not direct. She did not respond to that. But earlier in the hearing, she said, "I used to believe that we should not do nation building, but I came to realize that our security depends on not allowing failed states to become havens for terrorists in a way that could threaten American security.
In her opening statement that we just heard and throughout the day, she talked a lot about public diplomacy. She seemed to be saying at times, you were there, you tell me, but from afar it looked like she was saying maybe we were a little too pushy this last 4 years. We want to be a bit less pushy in the next four. Is that the way it came across in the hearing room or not?
The way it came across to me, although she didn't say this in so many words, was we've made tough decisions. We've rubbed people the wrong way. We want to strengthen those alliances, and we're going to put a lot of effort into that. Now, in one part in her remarks, she said, we're going to do things through alliances, but then she added, we'll only do them through alliances if we believe that doing so will be effective. So, in other words, she left herself an out. If it doesn't work to work through the UN or NATO or whoever, we're reserving the right to go our own way.
And, of course, we just heard her talking about transformational democracy. In some sense, that sounds like a contradiction in terms. I mean, democracy is typically incremental, diplomacy, I should say.
Yes, that was a very interesting phrase, transformational democracy.
Transformational diplomacy.
Transformational diplomacy. I think she's taking her cue from President Bush's call for transformation of the Middle Eastern region and others as well. I don't think you would have heard that phrase from her predecessor, Colin Powell.
It's a way of getting the boldness and the diplomacy all in there in one phrase, a pretty neat trick.
It is. It was quite bold, and I think a lot of people abroad will read differing things into it.
Paul Richter, thanks for being with us tonight.
Glad to do it.
Paul Richter, foreign policy correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He spoke with me from Washington. We are talking tonight about the confirmation hearings of Condoleezza Rice, her worldview, and her impact already on U.S. foreign policy. What do you think? What face does Condoleezza Rice put on American foreign policy? What imprint has she already made on America's relations with the world? Would you vote up or down on Condoleezza Rice? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is William Dobson, managing editor of Foreign Policy Magazine. William Dobson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So put yourself in the State Department for a moment here. Colin Powell's headed out. Condoleezza Rice apparently headed in. How are the folks in Foggy Bottom likely to receive her?
Well, they're definitely, possibly, and almost certainly contradictory responses. But I think on the whole that you put the question to me, if I were sitting in Foggy Bottom right now, I think I would be genuinely pleased with her appointment. And it should be welcome news to many because now the men and women working there will know that they're working for somebody who has a direct line to the Oval Office. For all of Colin Powell's political clout and popularity over the last 4 years, that was never the case with him. He was never a fully trusted member of the inner circle, and Rice will not face that obstacle.
So she'll be plugged in to the White House, but will she plug in to the kind of information chain that the State Department tends to feed up to the Secretary of State? There's, of course, the accusation has been that U.S. foreign policy has been ideological, not based on information so much.
Well, I mean, we're going to have to wait to see, but the early signs suggest that she will. I mean, and all that we can really do to judge the way she's perceiving her future role is to look at some of the early decisions that she's already made. And chiefly, that goes to some of her early appointments, who she's indicated her advisors are going to be. And she's named as her deputy Robert Zoellick, the former U.S. Trade Representative.
Mm-hmm.
And he is very respected, considered much more of a multilateralist than many others. And Nicholas Burns, a respected career diplomat, I should add. I mean, a career diplomat. So it suggests that she's not turning to the neocons to be her own inner circle. And that probably is sending a welcome signal to people in the State Department. Both of these men have served there with distinction for a long time.
And yet she got some tough going over today in the hearing from senators who were raising issues about how she relates to facts on the ground. We're going to be hearing throughout this hour testimony, sort of the call and response to the hearings today. Here's Senator Joe Biden, Democrat, Delaware, asking Condoleezza Rice if she's being upfront when she talks about the progress the U.S. military has made in training Iraqi soldiers and police.
How many security forces do you think are trained that can shoot straight, kill, and stand their ground? I don't mean in a uniform. I mean real live guys that are Marines. I was spent 4 hours in Fallujah. Our Marines are not real anxious to stand next to and count on a lot of Iraqi forces, except the few that were trained as special forces. Now, how many do you really think are trained that Alawi could look to and say, I can rely on those forces? What do you think that number is?
Senator, I have to rely on what I get from the field. And by the way, I think that the trips that you've made and the trips that the others have made have given us information that we can go back with, and I appreciate your doing that. We think the number right now is somewhere over 120,000. We think that among those people, there are clearly continue to be questions about on-duty time, that is, people who don't report for duty, and so this is being looked at. We are trying to provide for some of these units mentors who can help, trying to provide leadership from the Iraqis themselves that can help these people. But this is the reason that Gary Luck has gone out Secretary Rumsfeld's direction to take a hard look at the training program to see what General Petraeus, who, as you say, is a terrific soldier and has a lot of experience in Iraq, what he's been able to achieve, to work with the Iraqis to address some of these problems of leadership and morale and desertion in the armed forces and in the police forces, and to look at some of the equipping of the police forces. But I do want to note, Senator, that the Iraqis are making a lot of sacrifices here.
No question.
They're soldiers, they're police in places like Fallujah and places like Samarra and places like Najaf. They have played an active role in their security, but it is a process that takes some time. We believe that we've made some progress. We have more progress to make.
Well, I thank you for your answer. I think you'll find if you speak to the folks on the ground, they don't think there's more than 4,000 actually trained Iraqi forces. I strongly urge you to pick up the phone or go see these folks. And the reason I press it is not that Iraqis aren't sacrificing. They are. But that's almost irrelevant in one regard. The exit strategy for America is a trained force of several hundred thousand people. We're talking about a year or more to get anywhere close to that. We should level with the American people about it. But after you take a hard look as Secretary of State, I'd like to talk more with you about that. Thank you.
Senator Joe Biden today is speaking with Condoleezza Rice at the hearings before the Senate Formulations Committee. William Dobson, there seems to be an example of kind of yawning gap. Condoleezza Rice says, well, we've got, I'm told, 120,000 soldiers and Iraqi police ready to go. Joe Biden says something like more like 4,000, which seems much more like what we hear. Is that dissembling? Is that naivete? Is that, I don't know, is it putting on a good front? How do you describe it?
That's a good question. I mean, and she has in the past frustrated many people in hearings like this in her former capacity as National Security Advisor for not leveling, not being entirely frank or at least packaging or slanting the information in such a way that suggested that she was really It was more in tune with the political role of being the National Security Advisor as opposed to, say, the author of U.S. foreign policy, the role that she'll take on now as Secretary of State. And she's going to face grilling like this in the future because she is going to be an author of these initiatives. I suspect that, I mean, this is one of the reservations that many people have about her appointment is whether or not her loyalty to the president is going to cloud the credibility of the things she says.
You said she's not bringing a neocon gang with her to the State Department, but with an attitude like that, maybe she doesn't need to. Maybe it's built in.
Maybe. This is what's sort of going to be fascinating for people who follow foreign policy so closely to watch in the next 4 years. But there is a rule in Washington, which is that where you sit is where you stand. And Rice is now going to be the chief advocate for U.S. foreign policy around the world. And it's no longer going to do for her to be playing the trusted confidant to the president. In fact, that will not be the role that she'll be asked to play. So she's going to have to go back to your earlier question, tap into the U.S. Foreign Service and the people that she works with and represent their views throughout the administration.
Hard to picture Condi Rice as anything other than the trusted confidant to George W. Bush. William Dobson, stand by. We're talking tonight about the confirmation hearings of Condoleezza Rice and the impact and worldview of the new Secretary of State in waiting. What face does Condoleezza Rice put on American foreign policy? You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the confirmation hearings of Condoleezza Rice and the impact and the worldview of the new Secretary of State in waiting. She is expected to be approved by the Senate as early as Thursday, Inauguration Day. You can join the conversation tonight. What imprint has this confidant of George W. Bush already made on America's relations with the world? Is the United States better off with a marginalized Colin Powell or Bush intimate Condi Rice at the State Department? And Condoleezza Rice said today it's time for diplomacy, for a conversation with the world, not a monologue. Do you believe she will deliver that? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. There's a lot more we're going to hear tonight, but we want to keep the sound of these hearings in our ear as well. Senator Barbara Boxer, Democrat from California, was a very tough interrogator of Condoleezza Rice today. Here in this exchange, she sharply criticizes Rice for selling the Iraq war to the American people based on the threat supposedly posed by Iraq's weapons of mass destruction, which, of course, were never found.
You sent them in there because of weapons of mass destruction. Later, the mission changed when there were none. I have your quotes on it. I have the president's quotes on it. And everybody admits it but you, that that was the reason for the war. And then once we're in there, now it moved to a different mission, which is great. We all want to give democracy and freedom everywhere we can possibly do it. But let's not rewrite history. It's too soon to do that.
Senator Boxer, I would refer you to the president's speech before the American Enterprise Institute in February prior to the war, in which he talked about the fact that, yes, there was the threat of weapons of mass destruction, but he also talked to the strategic threat that Saddam Hussein was to the region. Saddam Hussein was a threat, yes, because he was trying to acquire weapons of mass destruction, and yes, we thought that he had stockpiles, which he did not have. We had problems with the intelligence. We are all, as a collective polity of the United States, trying to deal with ways to get better intelligence. But it wasn't just weapons of mass destruction. He was also a place, his territory was a place where terrorists were welcomed, where he paid suicide bombers to bomb Israel, where he had used Scuds against Israel in the past, and so we knew what his intentions were in the region, where he had attacked his neighbors before and, in fact, tried to annex Kuwait, where we'd gone to war against him twice in the past. It was the total picture, Senator, not just weapons of mass destruction that caused us to decide that post-September 11th, it was finally time to deal with the threat.
Well, you should read what we voted on when we voted to support the war, which I did not, but most of my colleagues did. It was WMD, period. That was the reason and the causation for that, you know, particular vote. But again, I just feel you quote President Bush when it suits you, but you contradicted him when he said, yes, Saddam could have a nuclear weapon in less than a year. You go on television 9 months later and said nobody ever said it was going to be.
Senator, that was just a question of pointing out to people that there was an uncertainty, that no one was saying that he would have to have a weapon within a year for it to be worth it to go to war.
Well, if you can't admit to this mistake, I hope that you'll rethink it.
Senator, we can have this discussion in any way that you would like, but I really hope that you will refrain from impugning my integrity. Thank you very much.
I'm just quoting what you said. You contradicted the president and you contradicted yourself.
A testy exchange today between Senator Barbara Boxer of California and Condoleezza Rice. We're joined tonight by William Dobson, managing editor at Foreign Policy Magazine, joins us from Washington. Now we're joined from the Hoover Institution at Stanford University in California by Larry Diamond. He's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. Professor of Political Science there, Director of the Democracy Program at Stanford's Institute for International Studies. From January to April last year, he served as a senior advisor to the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq. He's author of many books and a provocative piece in the September-October edition of Foreign Affairs entitled What Went Wrong in Iraq. Larry Diamond, thank you for being with us tonight.
Nice to be with you, Tom.
We're also joined tonight from Arlington, Virginia, by Greg Thielman. He's former director of the Office of Strategic Proliferation and Military Affairs at the State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Research. He was responsible for monitoring and analysis of all military-related intelligence. He retired in September 2002 after 25 years of foreign service. Greg Thielman, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Greg Thielman, first to you, if I may. You spent a long time at the State Department. You left in some deep disagreement over Iraq policy. Now here comes Condoleezza Rice. How do you think she'll be received? What kind of job do you think she'll do in Colin Powell's old office?
I agree very much with Will Dobson on some of the advantages she brings to the department. People in the State Department will appreciate her connections with the White House, the trust that she has earned with George Bush, and that will make a difference since so much of Colin Powell's advice was spurned by the White House. It is also very positive that most of the people that she is bringing to the State Department, the number two, the number three in the building, are people that the career diplomats and career civil servants will respect and appreciate. It should be mentioned, though, that she is also bringing along from the National Security Council Bob Joseph to replace John Bolton as Undersecretary for Arms Control and International Security Affairs. And this is basically the same hardline anti-arms control, anti-multilateral approach attitude that John Bolton had. So it is a bit of a mixed picture. It's not a complete victory for the pragmatists and the internationalists. But she carries those advantages. The uphill part of the struggle for her at the State Department is that she was often siding with Secretary Rumsfeld and Vice President Cheney against Colin Powell,
mm-hmm.
She would often advocate positions which spurned the expertise in the State Department and what a lot of Foreign Service officers saw as the objective reality in the world. Participating in the same kind of top-down approach to issues rather than letting the facts percolate up. And that will take some time to overcome. I think that it will take some time for her to gain the trust of the people in the department.
Larry Diamond, in California, how do you see it? You have known Condoleezza Rice for a long time. I think you may have been colleagues, in effect, there at Stanford for a while. She's risen very high, about as high as you can get in government service. What kind of Secretary of State do you see in the making here?
First of all, let me say she can rise higher, and it would not surprise me in the least to see her on the Republican ticket 4 years from now.
Hmm.
Second, I think that she has the potential to be a very effective Secretary of State. She is a charming person. She can be tough and arbitrary when she wants to be. But I think that if she follows the spirit that she indicated in her testimony today and in recent statements, whereby she intends to fight for the career Foreign Service the way Colin Powell did and the way George Shultz did, to recruit more Foreign Service officers, fight for their career benefits and standards and pay, fight to improve the conditions of service, you will see her, you know, be probably a fairly popular Secretary of State within the building. Moreover, people at the State Department, career Foreign Service officers, appreciate having a secretary who has the ear of the President of the United States and has clout with the President. And I think this could help her build a constituency of support within the building.
But you just heard Greg Thielman, 25-year veteran of the State Department, saying that she's of a group that's seen in the State Department as having spurned messengers of objective reality. That sounds like a tough nut to get by.
Well, it is initially, and it's a burden that she carries into the job, but I think that you're going to see her tack back toward a more realist and less ideological stance as Secretary of State. It's all in the writing. You've been referring to it already in terms of the sorts of people she's bringing in. Bob Zelik,
mm-hmm.
The trade representative, is coming in as deputy secretary. Her former colleague in the National Security Council, who was the staff director of the 9/11 Commission is a very pragmatic guy, could come in as counselor to the State Department. The whole group she's bringing in are more realist, less ideological, I'd say more pragmatic and moderate than certainly the people in the Pentagon and in the vice president's office who've been at the cutting edge, the neoconservatives, of pushing the invasion of Iraq and other kind of unilateralist dimensions of American foreign policy. I also predict that she will take perhaps some surprising initiatives to repair our relations with our European allies.
William Dobson, how does Condoleezza Rice come in with this more moderate crew and still relate to the sort of proven power centers around President Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, President Bush himself? Is she going to stand in opposition to those voices? Is she really going to carve out a new U.S. policy here?
Well, that's something that everyone's going to have to watch. I think it's sort of impossible to predict her behavior on that. But I think you're right to point out. I mean, in essence, she's had, as National Security Advisor, a very difficult job in that she had to deal with such a strong set of personalities. I mean, Henry Kissinger has said that Rumsfeld is the world's most ruthless man. Most vice presidents have only had a handful of foreign policy advisors. Vice President Cheney has a staff of foreign policy aides bigger than past presidents. And he played a role, as everyone knows, and if you believe most accounts, even greater than Rice herself. So there's going to be a big question here. In the past, that she did side with Cheney and with Rumsfeld on most issues, but sort of the institutional constraints on her now will make it very difficult to do so. But
do you see an inner moderate in Condoleezza Rice struggling to get out here?
Quite possibly.
Really?
Secretary of State in a second Bush administration is a very powerful position, and you would think it's always a powerful position, but maybe particularly so right now because diplomacy is the most attractive tool we have in a second administration. The military has already put the Bush administration in somewhat of a difficult position.
Strained to the breaking point, we're told.
The U.S. would be hard-pressed to deal with any other crises with a military adventure. The economic restraints are very real, and Americans don't have the tolerance for it. So
maybe the only tool she's got. I want to keep the voices of today's hearings in our ear. Senator Russ Feingold, Democrat, Wisconsin, challenged an earlier statement from Rice when she said that America is winning the war on terror by taking territory away from terrorists.
I don't share the view that they've lost territory, actually. I happen to have supported the invasion of Afghanistan and understand absolutely why we had to do that. But I've done a fair amount of work in East Africa and Northern Africa. We aren't denying the terrorist elements those territories. When it comes to Somalia or Algeria or the activities that have occurred in Kenya, our focus on Iraq has been so single-minded. And, in fact, I was told by some of our own officials in that region this past week that a lot of things have gone waiting because of the demands of the Iraq invasion in terms of dealing with this issue in North Africa and in Eastern Africa. And I know there are efforts going on, and I encourage those efforts, and I support them. But in terms of the balance, I think the balance has not been correct.
Well, Senator, in East Africa, we have a very effective set of partnerships in counterterrorism strategy with, for instance, Kenya. Somalia is a particular problem, a unique problem, given that it's ungoverned, in effect. And the problem there is to try and bring about some kind of stable government in the long run. But in the meantime, we have worked with Somalia's neighbors to try and increase their capacity to do with counterterrorism.
Dr. Rice, I see my time's up, but we have no policy in Somalia. Our government has no policy in Somalia, and we simply must reverse that if we're going to get serious about terrorism.
Senator Russ Feingold saying in effect today, what do you mean we're winning the war on terrorism? That's not so clear to him. Ray is calling from Manhattan. Hi, Ray. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I have two separate points. One, Condoleezza Rice conflated Soviet communism, German fascism, and variants of modern terrorism.
When she said, this is our World War II, this is our Cold War.
I think that's an outrageous mingling of totally different things. One came from a relatively underdeveloped country. One came from a modern democracy, Germany, and the other came from a whole lot of sources, much of which all terrorist groups are not alike.
But isn't she saying essentially that just in terms of scale, it's a challenge on that scale? Is that wrong?
It's what? Her conflation?
Yes.
Well, it's wrong. It's just fundamentally wrong. It's conflating, you know, apples, pigs, and oranges.
Okay. Your second point, Ray?
My second point, and I like that the second point for discussion, is that the insurgents are viewed as if they were the internal enemies. And it must be reminded, and I think this will be a future point that we'll have to face, that that the United States invaded Iraq, and it invaded Iraq on a lie. The Iraqi elections are taking place in the context of an occupying army. And I want to ask, how would Americans feel about having an election if they were being occupied by a foreign army? And
Ray, we've got to let my guest pick that up. Larry Diamond, I want to take that to you first, if I may. You wrote in Foreign Affairs last fall about what went wrong in Iraq. You said that the democratic future of Iraq now hangs in the balance, and you point to a lot of things that went wrong, that were done wrong. Does Condoleezza Rice, she was National Security Advisor, does she bear responsibility for that? And if it went wrong, why should she be given even a bigger job at State?
Well, look, I think she bears significant responsibility. First of all, she took over overall responsibility for Iraq in the fall of 2003. It was given by the president from the Pentagon, which failed miserably, to the National Security Council. I do give her credit for one thing, and I think it needs to be acknowledged. She took the initiative, as I explain in my forthcoming book, to bring the United Nations back into Iraq and to recruit both the UN in general and Lakhdar Brahimi to act as moderator. And what success we've had in the political transition since owes in no small measure to the return of the United Nations.
They seem hardly a factor in these elections. Correct me if I'm wrong.
We wouldn't be having elections right now if it weren't for the United Nations. I think the situation is problematic and very worrisome, but it would be worse without the UN mediation that we've had. We might have been on the cusp of all-out civil war now. So she does appreciate the value of the United Nations and the role it can play, but I also think she went along with or participated in some disastrously bad decisions, including, as your caller refers to, the decision to have an American political occupation of Iraq in the first place.
Greg Thielman, you were so upset about the intelligence that went into that, you left the State Department. Now here's a major architect of that war and the way that intelligence was used coming back to run it. You say it's good because she's an insider, but is that enough?
Well, no, it's not enough. As some of your guests have pointed out, she is bright, articulate, tough, and self-confident, but I'm afraid that Condoleezza has two problems. One is that she has a lack of good judgment on some critical foreign policy issues, and secondly, she has a problem with the truth. And it is the latter quality which I think disqualifies her to be Secretary of State. There are a number of instances in which I was closely involved as an intelligence analyst in which I watched Condoleezza Rice explain things falsely to the nation about what the intelligence evidence showed. She said that the aluminum tubes could be only suitable for nuclear weapons use in Iraq, when all of the intelligence agencies agreed that there were other alternative uses for the tubes.
And you knew that, and you're saying she knew it, even as she said it. We've got to take a short break. We're at 1-800-423-8255. The subject, Condoleezza Rice. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the confirmation hearings of Condoleezza Rice and the impact and worldview of the new Secretary of State in waiting. You can join the conversation tonight. Can Condoleezza Rice bring America out of the global doghouse, the doghouse of world public opinion? And does Condoleezza Rice tell it like it is or push an agenda? Are those in contradiction? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-8255. talk, joined tonight from the Hoover Institution at Stanford University by Larry Diamond. He wrote in the September-October edition of Foreign Affairs, What Went Wrong in Iraq. He served as a senior advisor to the Coalition Provisional Authority there for several months early last year. From Washington by William Dobson, managing editor of Foreign Policy Magazine. And from Arlington, Virginia by Greg Thielman, a 25-year veteran of the U.S. State Department, former director of the Office of Strategic Proliferation and Military Affairs at the State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Research. Mike is calling right now from Cambridge. Mike, you're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to make a comment regarding something Mr. Dobson said earlier. He commented on the comments Joe Biden made regarding the number of troops that are ready to serve, Iraqi troops to serve. And
he said 4,000, she said 120,000 or something
exactly.
Like that.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Dobson was kind of flailing for a euphemism for the word lie regarding what Condoleezza was saying. It's just one of a number of lies that she's basically propagated in the news media since the Iraq War, prior to the Iraq War, I should say. And I just wanted to make the quick comment, if I could, that the word lie has basically become this big taboo word in news media and in political circles, and I think it's extremely damaging to politics in this country, because we can't speak frankly about stuff and call a spade a spade.
And you want to paste the word lie right there on her microphone today. Thanks for your call, William Dobson. How about it? Is it lying? Is it putting the best foot forward, the best face on a bad situation?
Well, I'm certainly not in the position of defending former National Security Advisor Rice, now soon to be Secretary of State. Nor am I in a position like Greg Thielman is to say that I saw the intelligence and can call her out so dramatically as to say that it's a lie. But I have there's no doubt in my mind at all that she is been very savvy and has been very ambitious in pursuing these positions, and knew that it was probably in her best interest, if she wanted to serve in a second administration, to toe the line on some questions like that. But Greg, I think, has afterwards given us a very, very strong statement about what she's done with the information she's been given, and I think that speaks for itself.
Larry Diamond, you know Condoleezza Rice. You heard her bristle and come back very hard at Barbara Boxer on the integrity issue, and yet, you know, there are not weapons of mass destruction there. We've heard Greg Thielman attesting to what he saw directly. We had just this issue, call it small or large, of 4,000 versus 120,000 ready troops in Iraq. I doubt if you would assert that there are 120,000 ready troops in Iraq today. Is this lying? Is this diplomacy? Is this putting the best face on a tough situation? How do you see Condoleezza Rice's integrity?
Well, let me say a couple of things. Number one, she's been a friend. I'm not going to challenge her integrity directly in this way, and therefore I can't speak entirely objectively. There are
fair enough
ties of affection. I'll say only two other things. Number one, I think there is indications from what Greg Thielman have said and what's been brought out that she has not been truthful and candid. That's point number one. Number two, these issues were raised when she was provost of Stanford University.
In what context?
There were groups, student groups and faculty groups, who felt that she did not deal with them truthfully. Third, I want to say, listen, if you want a standard for untruthfulness and absolute deceit in a Secretary of State, look at Henry Kissinger. It's not like that she would be the first Secretary of State who's brazenly lied in the conduct of her job. So, my feeling is that I'm not excusing it. I think what's being brought out, I cannot clarify one way or another. I find it troubling. But when you look at the options we have for a Republican Secretary of State under George Bush, I will tell you, I breathed a sigh of relief when I heard it was going to be her and not some of the possible alternatives.
So we're breathing the sigh of real politic here. And yet Henry Kissinger, of course, has spent years as a kind of, I know he's at all the fancy parties, but still he's a kind of pariah. Condoleezza Rice is being promoted. You're relieved given the alternatives.
Yeah, I know it sounds strange, but that does reveal, Tom, a certain degree of skepticism, cynicism, and frankly fear I have about the conduct of American foreign policy in the next 4 years.
Meredith is calling from Boston. Hi, Meredith. You're on the air.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening.
I think the interesting thing here is that Condoleezza Rice and George Bush both essentially fulfill the same role, but from opposite points of the intellectual spectrum.
What do you mean?
I think George Bush brings very little to the job, and I think he's a clumsy and a not very bright front man for a group of people who have hijacked our government. And I think Condoleezza Rice, on the other hand, is a very sophisticated, classy, charming, poised salesperson for a group that has basically hijacked our government, has emptied our treasury, handed it back to their friends, has created a catastrophe in Iraq, has done nothing to address this overwhelming issue that's at our doorstep of global extreme climate change. And, did nothing to really address the issue of employment in our country, to do anything proactive.
So you're saying this duo is a fancy front man and a front woman, but the stew is being cooked somewhere else, Meredith. William Dobson, how about that? That's the completely critical critique, not just of U.S. foreign policy, but even broader. Let me turn that just, and we acknowledge what you're saying there, Meredith, hear it loud and clear. But William Dobson, how would you describe the shift that the Bush administration, you can parse it any way you want, has brought to U.S. foreign policy? Big picture, what's the shift?
With her promotion to Secretary of State?
No, in its first four years.
Well, in the first 4 years, I mean, it was remarkable. I mean, it sort of belies everything that she said today were her goals for the next 4 years. It's striking that she would have to go to such lengths to say that the United States will work with others, that it treats alliances, it will treat alliances as being very important, and that it's not, the world cannot function with just the United States alone at the wheel. These things have to be said because the last 4 years made it seem otherwise. It's very difficult for anyone to describe U.S. foreign policy in the past 4 years as being anything but unilateral. In most moments, and the moments when that wasn't the case, it was often viewed as just a cynical exercise. So it was a dramatic change. And what's different here now, what's new in my mind, is that her role was such a closeted one as a confidant to the president. She was closer to the president she served than almost any national security advisor ever has. Mm-hmm. She won't have that luxury anymore. She's going to be out front. And now that she has this increased public clout, what she's going to do with it, I think, will answer many of the questions that we're wrestling with now and that your callers have expressed.
Greg Thielman, let me put the same question to you with a different sort of coda here, but how would you describe the shift that Condoleezza Rice, George W. Bush have brought to U.S. foreign policy, big picture? And I guess, do you see Condoleezza Rice as the author of that shift, or as our caller suggests, a tool of its sale?
It's a little hard to know, not having been an intimate in the White House, to what extent she was a follower or a guide for this approach. She claims, I think, authorship of the National Security Strategy document, which, among other things, advocates a preventive war doctrine, which the planet saw as articulated by Imperial Japan when they attacked the U.S. at Pearl Harbor and by Nazi Germany when they attacked the Soviet Union.
That was pretty fundamental to term one of George W. Bush.
That's one piece of her advice. And then she was widely known also as her prescription for dealing with the problematic Europeans was, for example, to ignore the Germans. And about that time, Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld went to a security conference in Germany, hosted by the Germans, at a time when German soldiers were putting themselves in harm's way for American troops in Afghanistan, and the Secretary of Defense refused to meet his German Defense Ministry counterpart.
Mm-hmm.
This is not having a conversation rather than a monologue. This isn't even having a monologue. There's examples of things during the first 4 years that Condi Rice was very much involved in that really contradict a lot of the words we heard from her today.
Larry Diamond, who do you see as having been the central drafter of U.S. foreign policy in these first 4 years of the Bush administration? Are Condoleezza Rice's fingerprints on the heart of it, or is she carrying out something dreamt up elsewhere?
I think that the driving thrust of America's unilateralist and missionary foreign policy in the last 4 years has come out of the neoconservatives in the Pentagon, the neoconservatives in the vice president's office, including the vice president, Dick Cheney himself, and the president. I think what the country has failed to get, and what in particular the critics have failed to get over and over, is how much the broad strokes of American foreign policy have been shaped by the president's own impulses, and how much Condi Rice, as the president's closest advisor, has been not just shaping the way he looks at the world, but very much responding to his moral and political impulses for action, and moving her own view of the world somewhat in response to what she thinks the president of the United States wants.
So now she'll be at the head of the State Department by all expectations. Do we see her step out with a kind of worldview of her own, or is she still an extension of the president's moral view, as you put it, of the world, the president's overall worldview?
Tom, I predict that we will see some shift in her public persona and in her private advocacy as Secretary of State toward a more assertive stepping back or curtailing of this unilateralism and Yahoo foreign policy.
But she saw how cold Colin Powell was, how out in the dark and cold he spent his time there. Does she want to go there?
I think that she will. No, she doesn't. And I think she will read the president and to some extent attenuate what she has to say in light of her understanding of the president's instincts and wishes. But I think we are descending into a real calamity in Iraq. And as I think that calamity deepens, people who advocate a more pragmatic approach in the world are going to have more leverage in this administration.
Greg Thielman, do you think that Condoleezza Rice is going to be stepping into a nest of angry opponents at the State Department, people who feel that they got pushed around by her and the White House during Bush term one?
I think there will be some resentment, some anger at, I think a lot of people at the State Department appreciate how complicated foreign affairs are and how difficult it is to explain to the public. But I think a lot of people have genuine, at least sorrow, if not anger, when as a result of the National Security Advisor to the president, the public is even farther from an understanding of the reality after you know that articulation. So I think that will be a negative element that has to be overcome. On the other hand, State Department people are professionals. They've worked for all kinds of presidents of very different points of view, and they try to serve them loyally. And I think that's the kind of service you'll get from State Department employees.
And William Dobson, we've got Larry Diamond predicting that this may not be the highest post that Condoleezza Rice holds in the U.S. government. There aren't many higher. They lead to the White House. That would be a picture for the foreign policy establishment. I don't know when the last time was, if ever, that we saw a Secretary of State stepping on up or even conceived as a potential White House occupant. President. William Dobson.
Yes.
Are you in stunned dismay at the very idea?
You cut out there for a minute.
Sorry.
What was your question?
Just can you imagine a foreign policy establishment headed by someone, not least a black woman, who is seen as a potential future vice president or even president, presidential timber?
I suppose it will all depend on how the next 4 years play out as to how she's viewed. There's no question, listening to today's hearing, that you get a sense of what an enormous job she has ahead of her. And she's promising that the United States will work with others around the world. And given the record of the last 4 years, a record that she's responsible for in large part, she's going to be met with a fair amount of skepticism, not just in the State Department, but when she travels overseas, for many of the reasons we've heard. I think that and what that relies on ultimately is what the relations are between her office and the vice president's office over the next 4 years. That's the rift that's going to matter most.
We'll be watching more testimony tomorrow, the vote likely coming on Thursday, Inauguration Day. William Dobson at Foreign Policy Magazine, thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Greg Thielman, longtime State Department employee, thanks for being with us tonight. And Larry Diamond, author of the forthcoming World Religions and Democracy, it's out in June. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.